check the mic and make sure it sound right, boys.
Welcome to another episode of Cobb's Corner. If this is your first time listening, welcome, and to my returning listeners, welcome back. This is the 78th episode, so thank you for tuning in. On this episode of Cobb's Corner, we're going to continue our AFI's Top 100 series that we've been doing for a little while now with The Godfather. The Godfather is ranked number 2 on the AFI's Top 100 list. It's ranked second to Citizen Kane. I have already reviewed Citizen Kane. That was the first movie that we did. So now that I have taken the time to read Mario Puzo's The Godfather, which was published in 1969, and I have now, for the second time, watched The Godfather in 1972, I am now prepared to review it. So, starting off with the introduction. Introduction. The aging patriarch of an organized crime dynasty transfers control of his clandestine empire to his reluctant son. Storyline. The Godfather, Don, Vito Corleone, is the head of the Corleone Mafia family in New York. He is at the event of his daughter's wedding. Michael, Vito's youngest son and a decorated World War II Marine, is also present at the wedding. Michael seems to be uninterested in being a part of the family business. Vito is a powerful man and is kind to all those who give him respect, but is ruthless against those who do not. But when a powerful and treacherous rival wants to sell drugs and needs the Don's influence for the same, Vito refuses to do it. What follows is a clash between Vito's fading old values and the new ways, which may cause Michael to do the thing he was most reluctant in doing, and wage a mob war against all the other mafia families, which could tear the Corleone family apart. This storyline is provided to us via IMDb. The movie is directed by the great Francis Ford Coppola. Francis Ford Coppola, you have seen his work on Apocalypse Now, which came out in 1979. That is ranked number 30 on the AFI Top 100, so we'll be reviewing that in a later episode. Stay tuned for that. He directed The Conversation, 1974. That was the very first Coppola movie that I watched when I was in high school. Intro to Film Studies class, we watched The Conversation along with Rear Window, Eagle Eye, Ex Machina. We watched a ton of movies that had to do with surveillance. So Conversation, that was my introduction to Francis Ford Coppola as a director. And, of course, he directed The Godfather Part 2, which came out in 1974, 2 years after The Godfather in 72. Godfather Part 2 is ranked number 32 on the AFI Top 100. The movie is written by Francis Ford Coppola as well as Mario Puzo. Mario Puzo is the author who wrote the novel The Godfather, 1969, which the movie is based on. Mario Puzo is also known for his work on movies like Superman, Superman 2, and of course the screenplays for all three Godfathers, namely The Godfather, which is the movie that we're reviewing today, along with The Godfather Part 2 in 1974, and then the eventual Godfather Part 3 in 1990. The main cast includes Marlon Brando as Don Vito Corleone. You've seen Marlon Brando play Colonel Walter E. Kurtz in Apocalypse Now. Terry Molloy in On the Waterfront, 1954. On the Waterfront is number 19 on the AFI Top 100. And Paul in Last Tango in Paris, which came out this same year as The Godfather, 1972. Al Pacino stars as Michael Corleone. You've seen him play Serpiso in Serpiso, 1973, Sunny in Dog Day Afternoon, Big Boy Caprice in Dick Tracy, and in my opinion, one of his most iconic roles was as Tony Montana in the 1983 Scarface reboot. Last but not least, we got James Caan as Sonny Corleone. James Caan is known for playing, you've seen him as Frank in The Thief, 1981, Paul Sheldon in Misery, 1990, Jonathan E. in the original Rollerball from 1975. I know him as Walter Hobbs in Elf, 2003. Check out my review of Elf that I did last year in the summer. I forget exactly which episode number that is, but definitely check out my review for Elf. It was a part of my Change Your Life series that I did summer 2023. So, always spoilers ahead if you have not watched The Godfather. Final spoiler warning. And without any further ado, let's go to Cop's Corner. So as I said, this movie, The Godfather, is based on the novel of the same name that was written by Mario Puzo that came out 3 years prior to the movie being made. And there are some similarities and differences between the movie and the novel. This movie is regarded by many to be the greatest film of all time. IMDb has it ranked as number 2. Second only to The Shawshank Redemption and just above The Dark Knight, which is ranked number 3. So let me know. I would love to hear from you guys. Like, what do you think is the greatest movie of all time? And I know even the AFI, they had this one as number 2, second to Citizen Kane, which still don't really agree with them on that. Nevertheless, some of my favorite parts from the movie are, of course, the opening scene. I got to talk about the opening scene where we hear the voice of Amerigo Buonasera, and he's saying how, "I believe in America, I love this country, I raised my daughter in the American fashion," and how she went out on a date with a boy who was not an Italian, and she was violated, she ended up in the hospital, and the boys were sentenced by a judge, but then the judge suspended their sentence. They got away scot-free, and he's asking the Don to essentially kill the boys as a form of justice, which, of course, Don Corleone denies his request and says, "I cannot do that. That's not justice because your daughter is still alive." So early on, we're starting to see sort of the morality behind Don Corleone, who's this mafia boss, who's involved in like racketeering and gambling, and as of now he's not in the drug business, but he really like gives Buonasera the benefit of the doubt. He says, "As a token of my thanks, your daughter's still alive. Even though my wife is the godmother of your only child, of your daughter, one day I may need a favor from you, and that day may never come, but be on the lookout." And so Buonasera says, "Thank you." He says, "Grazie," to which Don Corleone responds, "Prego," which is the Italian for "you're welcome." Yeah, grazie, prego. And this happens on the day of the Don's daughter, Connie, who's played by Talia Shire, who is the sister of Francis Ford Coppola. All right. The day of her wedding. Oh, you've also seen Talia Shire. She was Adrian in the Rocky franchise. And it's on the day of her wedding, and Michael and the Don's youngest son, Michael, he is also there, as well as Johnny Fontaine. Now, Johnny Fontaine, this is one of the main differences between the movie and the book. In the book, there's a whole segment, and it's kind of a bit of a distraction from, like, the main plot of the novel. Like, Johnny Fontaine, he has, like, entire chapters devoted to him and his marriage and his affairs and, you know, how he had been, like, married and divorced, like, twice, and how, as he got older, he was a singer who, as he got older, he was having problems singing, his voice, you know, he started having, like, voice cracks, and so then he tried to make the shift into movies, and so now, on the day of the Don's daughter's wedding, he's essentially asking the Don to get him a part in a movie, and he comes to the Don's office, and this is, like, how much of a presence Marlon Brando, who's unfortunately no longer with us, you know, Marlon Brando, who was just, his on-screen presence, all right, he's sitting down, and Johnny Fontaine's sitting on his desk, like, saying, you know, like, Godfather, and actually, Johnny Fontaine is Don Corleone's godson, so he refers to Don Corleone as Godfather, and says, you know, Godfather, what am I going to do? My career's in shambles. I think this movie can put me back on top. I'm going to, you know, they got a role that's perfect for me. What am I going to do? And then the Don kind of like, roughs him up a bit. He says, like, you can act like a man. What is, it's like, what are you, in my office crying? Like, do you spend time with your family? Good. And he says how, like, because a real man always spends time with his family, and so I think, like, a couple minutes of the movie, we start to get some character, not so much character development, but some character establishment for Don Corleone and who he is and the kind of reputation that he has in New York City and with, like, the people that he knows, and maybe just the kind of presence that he has. And there's even a scene where Luca Brasi comes in, and I've been told that the actor who played Luca Brasi, we actually see him sitting down at the party, and he's, like, rehearsing what he's gonna say to the Don. I've been told that the actor was so nervous, because this was, like, his very first scene, like, he was so nervous that he was actually rehearsing his line for that scene, and then even in the scene he's kind of, like, a little fidgety, and he's, like, looking down, and so, I mean, it worked. You know, Luca Brasi, who's this, like, you know, kind of big, kind of heavier set, muscular gentleman who's one of the Don's, like his muscle, and, you know, kind of helps out with the family business from time to time. And Michael's there as well, the Don's youngest son, Michael, who's played by Al Pacino. He's there at the wedding with his girlfriend, Kay Adams, and he's telling Kay how, yes, his father is a gangster, essentially. His father, you know, has had people killed, and, you know, they're still in the gambling business, but that's his family, that's not him. You know, Michael's assuring Kay, that's not me. That's my father, that's my brothers, that's the family business, that's not Michael Corleone. And in the book, they go more in depth into how Michael Corleone, he actually went on to college. I forget exactly which college he went to. He went on to college, and then when World War II broke out, he enlisted in the Marines and became a decorated war hero. So he's coming home from, I think it's about either 1945 or 1946. So, like, World War II was, like, just ended, and, you know, he's come back home from the war, and he's attending his sister's wedding, and there's, like, a big celebration. They even get a visit from, like, some guys from the FBI, and I mean Michael, he's having to reassure his now girlfriend, Kay Adams. They do eventually get married, but they're still boyfriend and girlfriend at the time. So the movie's very long, so I'm kind of just, like, going over, like, just kind of like the highlight reel. you know, there's a meeting between Vito Corleone and his sons, you know, Vito Corleone along with his sons and the Tartaglia family. Yes, the, or not the Tartaglia family, one of the guys who had just gotten out of jail, who is now in the narcotics business. Yes, who is now in the narcotics business. Gosh, what's his name? And essentially, they want the Don to get into drugs. They want him to get into the narcotics business, to which, you know, Don Corleone, who was just so eloquent with his words, he says how, you know, I have made my fortune with the gambling business and with, of course, the olive oil business, which is like the legitimate business that they have, the front for their criminal activities. And I've risen to power by staying out of the drug game, staying out of narcotics. And he's choosing to reject the Tartaglia family and their offer for him to get into the drug business because he believes that, you know, the drug business will be the death of us all. I will stay out of the business. You know, that is not my interest. That said, I have no quarrel with you and I wish you well. You know, I pray for your success. If you choose to go into that business, I will not make a move against you so long as you don't make a move against me, and we can be, you know, allies or non-enemies. You know, pretty much he's essentially like saying in this meeting, like, you do you, sort of. So yeah, we see the Don Corleone, Vito's very disciplined. He's very strict with the way that he decides to run his business, and he says, no, I'm not going to get into drug business. And this ultimately gets Vito shot and almost killed. He gets shot like 5 times while he's out at a market. But he's out at like a marketplace. He gets shot, and he ends up in the hospital. One night, his son Michael comes to visit him, but then Michael is stopped by the police outside of the hospital. And, you know, they grab him, and it's actually one of the police officers who's on the Tartaglia's or Solozzo's payroll. You know, he gets stopped by a crooked cop who then ends up like punching him and like breaking his jaw, but then Michael gets bailed out by Tom Hagen. Yes, Tom Hagen, who is played by Robert Duvall. Tom Hagen is the adopted son of Vito Corleone. He is not the biological son of Vito Corleone. Tom was found one day as a boy. He was found. He was living on the streets. He didn't have a place to stay. So then Don brought him in. The Don took him in and adopted him and raised him as one of his own. So he is Don Corleone's son, and he is, you know, Michael's brother, and he's pretty much the consigliere conciliary. You know, again, shout out to my Italian-speaking listeners in Italy, my Italian-speaking listeners in the United States, worldwide. Feel free to critique my pronunciations of any of these words. do my best. So he's bailed out by his brother, Tom Hagen, and then they try to assure Michael that going after his father was purely business, that it was nothing personal, even though Michael had to have his jaw fixed. And so now the plan is for them to go after Solozo, and I think the Turk is the name of the, or not the Turk, go after Solozo and the crooked cop who had punched Michael in the jaw. And the plan is they go to this restaurant, this Italian restaurant, and they hide a gun behind one of those old toilets. I've actually never seen a toilet like this in real life. It's like one of those old toilets where there's like the boxes like up against the wall up top, and then you have to like pull to flush. You like pull down to flush. It's like an old, one of those old school toilets. They hide the gun behind the toilet box. I don't really know what that's called. Box where they, all the water is, and like where you flush, and so yeah. Plan is to hide the gun, and then Michael asks to use the bathroom. He gets up, goes to the bathroom, grabs the gun, flushes the toilet, so they think that he actually used the bathroom. And then he walks out and then kills both the cop and Tattaglia. Tattaglia. And runs, and then doesn't run out there. Does not run out of the restaurant. You know, he walks out of the restaurant, and then a car comes, picks him up, drives him away. He escapes to Italy. He escapes to Italy, and in the movie, I realize that, again, it's a movie, and they can't include every minute little detail. Like, in the book, they go into detail about how the plan is for them to go after the other family, get their revenge, and they set up, you know, like, the mafia boss in Sicily, him being able to take in Michael Corleone as the son of Vito Corleone, and it's even established in the book, and we're going to revisit Vito Corleone and his life and how he rose to power. That's all going to be talked about in The Godfather Part 2. So I don't want to reveal too much, but Corleone is the name of the village that Vito was from. Now, Vito Corleone is actually not the name that he was given at birth, but he adopted the last name Corleone after coming to America through Ellis Island. So the Corleone village, and Michael is essentially living there under the protection of the mafia, and he just wants to kind of start over. You know, he starts over. He ends up marrying a young woman named Apollonia, who is the son of, who's a daughter of a cafe owner. Like he even like approach. He goes and asks the cafe owners, like, you know, I would like to meet your daughter under your, you know, with your permission and under your family's supervision. I would like to meet your daughter, and my name is Michael Corleone. Most people would be killed for that kind of information. But then your daughter would lose a father instead of gaining a husband, and so he really comes correct, you know, to Apollonia's father, and asks for not her hand in marriage, but for his permission to allow him to talk to his daughter and to get to know his daughter. And so this happens, the two of them, they fall in love, they get married, and so now Michael is really just living in Italy on his own. He's just kind of like, he's just laying low, and it's unclear exactly how long he spends in Italy. My guess is it's a couple years, I'm sure. And, you know, they're just waiting for things to die down after, because he literally, like, you know, killed a crooked cop and killed one of the members of the other families. So all of this, meanwhile, his father, Don Corleone, is still in the hospital. He's still recovering. And then, so some time passes, and also Michael was unable to tell Kay that he was going to be moved to Italy. He just tells her, go back to New Hampshire, stay with your parents, you'll hear from me soon. Some time goes by, and he's teaching Apollonia to drive and also teaching her English. So the two of them, they're kind of having a good time. They're kind of just chilling in Italy until one day the mafia boss in Italy, who Michael is under his protection, he says how it's not safe for you to stay in the Corleone village anymore. We want to move you someplace else. As they're packing up their bags, one of the two bodyguards, that was assigned to Michael, he ends up putting what looks like a bunch of suitcases into the back of the car, closes the back, and then he just runs off. Turns out that those weren't all suitcases, they were explosives, and the car blows up with Apollonia inside. So Michael has now lost his wife, Apollonia. She has now officially been killed by either a rival, one of the other five families, or the family that was giving Michael asylum in Sicily. But he has now lost his wife, Apollonia. We cut back to the States, cut back to New York City, and, you know, Connie, the brother of Michael Corleone, she is in an abusive relationship with her husband, Carlo Rizzi. Again, Connie played by Talia Shire, and Carlo Rizzi is played by Gianni Russo. And so I get that it's 1972. There's a whole scene where Connie has made dinner, and she tells Carlo, dinner's ready, and he says, I'll eat later, I'm not hungry, I'll eat when I'm out. And then she's essentially complaining how, like, she made this whole big dinner for him and he doesn't even want to eat it. And so then the two of them, you know, she starts like breaking plates and throwing stuff, and then, you know, he starts abusing her. I mean, this movie is rated R. I forgot to mention, like, yes, it did come out in 1972, and that was when you started to see the boundaries pushed for, like, what was allowed in movies and what wasn't. I think the 70s, that's when, like, the rating system started to show up. It's like, sure, you can show this in movies, but not everybody's allowed to watch this. You can't show this to, you know, children or anybody under the age of 17, I think it is. So, again, for those of you under the age of 17, you should not be watching The Godfather. Definitely wait till you're older. You know, this is an R-rated film. And yeah, so we see that Connie's in an abusive relationship. There's even a scene where Carlo is approached on the street and he's approached on the street by Sonny, who is played by James Caan, the aforementioned Sonny, who was mentioned in the introduction. I also forgot to mention that Kay Adams is played by Diane Keaton. Can't really name anything she's been in. She's been in like a few of the book club movies. You've probably seen something that she's been in. But yeah, James Caan's character, Sonny Corleone, he approaches Carlo on the street in New York one day, and he essentially jumps Carlo, and I mean the fight choreography, I mean, literally as I was watching this movie, I'm like, okay, clearly Sonny is punching the air in some of these scenes. Like, I get that it was the 70s and your stunt choreography wasn't what it is today, but clearly you are punching the air, sir. And they're just trying to sync up like the sound with like the what it, when it looks like one the other character's being hit. So So yes, that whole scene happens. Eventually, Vito, he recovers, and he finds out that Sonny is killed. After he goes after Carlo, Sonny is murdered. He stopped at a toll booth, and then there's a car in front of him. The car in front of him stops, and I think this is exactly how it happens in the book. He stops at the toll booth, and then all these guns appear in the other toll booth, in the toll booth on the other side, and then the people in the car right in front of his, they get out with shotguns, and Sonny's murdered in the middle of the highway. Vito wakes up, he recovers, he realizes that Michael's still in Italy at this point. And Vito, we actually see Vito cry. It's the only time we see Vito cry, as he mourns the loss of his son, Sonny Corleone. But really interesting, and I think this might be one of my favorite scenes, if not my favorite scene in the movie. In Vito's mourning, as he is sad about the passing of his son, he then goes from grief to business in the same breath. He says, "Do not make any inquiries into his death. I don't want any inquiries into his death. I don't want anyone to seek revenge. You know, nobody must make any moves against any of the other five families. This war ends now. I have lost a son. One of the other families, they have lost a son. This war, it ends now. I gotta be the peacemaker." So he calls for a meeting with the heads of the five families, and they have people come from all over the United States. You know, the mafia families from the five boroughs of New York, all the way down to like Kansas City, the West Coast, you know, wherever. They all have a sit-down meeting in New York. And Don Corleone really makes his peace with the five families. He says how, "I have lost a son. You have also lost a son." I think it was the family that was trying to get him into narcotics. The Tattaglia family. So as he's talking to the head of the Tattaglia family, he's like, "I have lost a son, as have you. And I know that you want, and I know that you would like me to get into the narcotics business. And I have had a moral compass. I've had a code then and now, you know, before you made a move against me. And now that I'm still alive and I have recovered, as long as there's breath in my lungs, the Corleone family will stay out of narcotics. We will stay out of drugs. Drugs will be the end of us all." And then the other families, they propose that, yes, we do get into the drug business, but it's controlled. And yes, they do use some racial slurs in that scene. I'm not calling Francis Ford Coppola a racist by any means, or even Mario Puzo. I get that the movie is set in the 1940s, and it's said the 1940s, it came out in the 70s, around the same time as the events of the movie American Gangster and Frank Lucas and, you know, Godfather of Harlem. All movies and shows that I'd like to check out one day. But yeah, they do say, pretty much, for lack of a better phrase, give the narcotics to the niggers, their animals. They'll use it, you know, to each other. And so yeah, that's essentially the plan. Which, of course, Don Corleone, he stands firm. We will not deal in narcotics. We have been in the gambling business. We've been in the racketeering business. But we have successfully stayed out of drugs, and we will continue to stay out of drugs, continue to make our fortune with our olive oil business and with gambling and with casinos, and actually end up moving their operation to Nevada, to Las Vegas, And, you know, Don, he says, we will stay out of the narcotics business. And one thing that I think was emphasized more in the novel, and it's kind of hinted at in one of the scenes between Vito and son Michael, is the fact that they wanted, like, not just Vito, but like the heads of the five families, you know, they were these, you know, criminal enterprises, yet they wanted their children and their children's children to turn the five families into legitimate businesses. They wanted to get clean. They wanted to go straight, I think, as the term is, you know, they were gonna go straight. Maybe not them, maybe not their generation, but maybe the next generation, you know, the Michael Corleone, you know, and his generation, you know, him and his brothers, and, you know, Sonny and Fredo, and, you know, let's make the Corleone family, let's be a legitimate business. You know, we could have Governor Corleone or President Corleone, Senator Corleone. You know, really, that's what Vito wanted for his children, especially the fact that Michael Corleone, who is a first generation American, and Vito being an Italian immigrant who immigrated to the United States, which we will see in Godfather Part 2, so stay tuned for that episode. You know, really Vito was hopeful for the future. You know, him saying, like, yes, I am a mob boss. Yes, I made my fortune through committing crimes and, you know, through, you know, my connections in the press and the police force and, you know, politics, and, you know, I don't play by their rules. You know, I don't play by the rules. I forget if it's in the book or the movie. I think he says it in the movie, like, I don't play by the rules that these lawmakers make, that these politicians make, you know. But the goal was to eventually become clean. The goal was to eventually turn their criminal empire into a legitimate business. That's what they want. And I think that maybe that's one of, I guess, the universal themes, not just of, like, The Godfather, but of the, like, immigrant experience in America. All right, now, I guess I can't personally really relate because, you know, both of my parents, both my mother and my father, are born in the United States. And so growing up, I had African-American parents, you know, born and raised in the United States. English is my first language, my parents' first language, all right? So I didn't grow up with immigrant parents, and I would love to actually hear from any of my listeners in the States who are first-generation Americans. You know, either one or both of your parents is not originally from the United States. They immigrated to the United States. I'd love to hear from you guys. But there's a general feeling of, like, you know, I'm not from the United States, but I'm, like, leaving the old country, whether that be in Europe, South America, Africa, Asia, wherever you're from originally. I'm immigrating to the United States, the land of opportunity. You know, that's kind of, like, one of the main... I guess slogans that we have when it comes to, like, America and, like, propaganda and, like, the outside world is, like, America, the land of opportunity. And I have to say, you know, warts and all, because America, you know, we got some work to do. I will say that America as a nation has given, it is a land of opportunity, it is a land of second chances. It has given so many immigrants a fresh start in America, and, you know, I have to give props where props is due, of course. And I feel like there's a general feeling amongst immigrants that if I'm leaving my old country and I'm coming to America, I may have to work hard, I may have to work twice as hard, because I'm not from here. Maybe I'm not fluent in English. Maybe I don't really speak the language. So I'm going to experience some setbacks, but I have to keep my head down. I have to grind. I have to, you know, I have to grind, start a business, and then one day start a family. And then when my kids are born, they are the first, they will carry on the family name, but they will be first generation Americans, and they aren't going to have to struggle like I did. I feel like that's like a general feeling that not just immigrants have, but also a general feeling that like parents will have, that like you want your child or your grandchild to do better than you were. You want them to have every advantage that you didn't have. You know, that you don't want them to have to struggle as much as you did. And I think that's the general feeling, to bring it back to The Godfather, that's like the general feeling that Vito, the general hope and vision that he had for his empire that he's created, and for the Corleone family, for us to stay out of narcotics and to eventually get out of the criminal business altogether. Like, let's become a legitimate business. Let's have, you know, Michael Corleone, you could have been, you know, my son or my grandson, he could be the president of the United States one day. He could be a senator, a judge, you know, they can have legitimate professions, legitimate legal professions, you know, and I feel like that's a general, I feel like that's the overall vision, that's the overall hope that Vito had for his kids and for his grandkids, hence why he repeatedly said, you know, we are staying out of narcotics, and, you know, one day we will go clean. One day we will become clean. I want the next generation and the generation after that to do better than I did. You know, I want them to be better, to be, you know, to rise to power legally, be legitimate businessmen and businesswomen. So, movie ends with Michael Corleone. He is asked by his sister Connie, who has been pregnant for like most of the movie. You know, she's, you know, married, and then at some point she becomes pregnant with her and Carlos' first child. Connie has asked Kay to ask Michael to be the godfather of their first child. Michael eventually agrees. The movie ends with the christening of Michael's niece, I think. So there's a christening, and if I'm not mistaken, the baby that was used might have been Sofia Coppola, who is Francis Ford Coppola's daughter. I know she shows up in all three Godfather movies. I think she's in the first two as a baby, and then she's all grown up in Godfather Part 3, which I might do Godfather Part 3 at some point, even though it's not on the AFI Top 100 list, but stay tuned for my Godfather Part 3 review at some point. It's a christening that's cut together with, you know, all of these, like, mafia busts that are, not mafia busts, but, like, essentially Michael sending folks out now that his father has died, now that Vito has passed away, and now there's the christening of Connie's child, and now that Michael Corleone has risen to power, now he's the Don. He has set up the Corleone family to essentially clean house and to go after their enemies in the other five families, and essentially Vito's worst fear has come true. You know, that now this all-out war is essentially going to happen. He even has, you know, Michael, he even has his own brother-in-law killed. Connie's husband, Carlo, who again was abusive and did and did actually have Sonny, Michael's brother, killed. You know, he approaches Carlo and tells him, like, you know, please don't deny that you had Sonny killed. It is, you know, don't insult my intelligence. Here is a plane ticket for you to go to Nevada. You can go to Nevada, but don't tell me that you didn't do it. So Carlo finally confesses, I did it. And then Michael says, you know, go get in the car. They'll take you to the airport. Carlo sits in the passenger seat of the car and he's strangled to death. The movie ends with, you know, Connie driving over to Michael's house, and she's just yelling at Michael, saying, like, the, you know, claiming that he killed Carlo, and she's just kind of going crazy. And then Kay, Michael's wife now, you know, now Michael and Kay are married, they have a son named Anthony. Kay sort of reassures Connie that Michael didn't do it, he didn't have your husband killed. Kay, after Connie leaves, Kay confronts Michael and asks if he killed Carlo, to which Michael initially dismisses it. He says, you know, Kay, don't ask me about my business. You know, please don't ask me about my business. I just need you to trust me. And he finally says, you know, this once, just this once, I will let you ask me about my business affairs. To which Michael says, no, it's not true. I did not kill Carlo. And his wife believes him. Of course, it's a lie. You know, we all know that Michael actually did have Carlo killed. The movie, you know, well, at least in the book, Michael did have Carlo killed, and he took advantage of the blind trust that his wife has put into him, and, you know, him telling her, don't tell me about my business, and I need you to trust me. So he took advantage of the trust that his wife has put into him, essentially. Movie ends with, we see Kay leave his office, and we see all these other crime bosses, or we see all these other folks come into the office and refer to Michael as Don Corleone, because he is now Don Corleone, as the door closes to his office and the credits roll. So real quick, because I know the favorite parts, segment was pretty long. The themes that are explored in this movie are like honor, loyalty, and forgiveness. Honor in the honor that Vito had for his family, the honor and loyalty that he had to his family and those who he took care of, those who depended on him, the loyalty that Tom Hagen had to Don Corleone, despite Don Corleone not being his biological father, and trusting the Don's judgment, and, you know. So yes, family, honor, loyalty, forgiveness. Forgiveness is a big one of Don Corleone choosing not to seek revenge against those who attempted to take his life, those who took his son's life. He said, I am not going to seek vengeance, because no amount of vengeance, no amount of extra bloodshed is going to bring my son back. So, you know, I forgive those who have raised a hand against me, and I choose not to raise a hand against any of you as I make arrangements for my son to be brought back into the country. And I wish you all well. So yes, forgiveness, loyalty amongst family members, loyalty amongst business partners. Those are like the main themes of this film. The impact that this movie has had on Hollywood at large. This is, again, regarded as one of the greatest films of all time. In my opinion, it's at least the greatest, like, gangster movie. Period. I'm saying that now. You know, it's the best. It's the greatest gangster movie of all time. Like, you know, if I'm thinking about, like, organized crime movies, you know, mob movies, you know, it's, for me, it's like Godfather, and then, like, below the Godfather, I put maybe Godfather 2, Goodfellas, Scarface, Boys in the Hood, American Gangster. Yeah, you know, and those are all great films, but, you know, the Godfather is just top tier. You know, I mean, this movie, like, it's just become such a big part of, like, the cultural zeitgeist at large. Like how many of us haven't heard the line, like, I'm gonna make him an offer, he can't refuse. Like, I feel like most of us have heard a line from this movie. If you haven't seen this movie, then you've maybe seen one scene from it, or you've heard a line from the film, or like a scene from this movie that's been referenced in another TV show or another movie. So, like, this movie is just such a big part of the cultural zeitgeist, and we turned 50 years old 2 years ago, as of the recording of this podcast. This movie is 52 years old. It came out in 1972. It is currently 2024, and the sequel, Godfather Part II, this December will turn 50. Godfather Part II came out December 20th, 1974. It is now 2024, so Godfather Part II will turn 50, and over the last half century, I mean, this movie is just iconic. It's just iconic. On to the Godfather Plus. I can feel the blood creeping up from the heathens. Got will, got fight, got pride, got reason. If they want to go eat, then you know I'm going to feed them. If you're coming for me, hope you're ready for a demon. I got eyes in the back of my head, I'm seeing. Take me for granted and you know I'm leaving. I'ma take what's mine with the webs I'm weaving. I could take this crowd from seeing to believe. So this movie got a lot of recognition, a lot of award recognition at the Academy Awards in 1973. Starting off with Albert S. Ruddy. He won the Oscar for Best Picture. Of course, Marlon Brando won Best Actor in a Leading Role, although Brando did not attend the ceremony. He chose instead to have himself represented by Sachin Littlefeather, aka Maria Cruz, a Native American Californian actress. She clarified that Brando respectfully refused the award due to the poor treatment of American Indians in entertainment, as well as the recent Wounded Knee incident. After several jeers were drowned out by applause, Littlefeather further stated that she hoped she had not intruded on. She hoped that she had not intruded, and that, quote, our hearts and understandings will meet with love and generosity. So that goes to show the kind of person that Marlon Brando was. Shout out to all of my First Nations that are listening across North America. You know, all of my First Nations and Aboriginal folks listening around the world. Big salute. I might do, like, smoke signals or Dances with Wolves or Wind Talkers at some point. So, James Caan was nominated for Best Actor in a Supporting Role for his role as Sonny, and rightfully so. I mean, Sonny's probably, like, the realest, rawest character in this movie. Robert Duvall was nominated for Best Actor in a Supporting Role for Tom Hagen. You know, Tom Hagen, again, he's the legal side. He's the more legal, like, educated side of, like, the Corleone family. So, big shout out to Robert Duvall. Al Pacino was also nominated for Best Actor in a Supporting Role. Pacino also did not attend the ceremony in protest of perceived category fraud, as his performance reflected greater screen time than that of his co-star Marlon Brando. Pacino believed he should have received the nomination for Best actor in a, for best actor in a leading role, not best actor in a supporting role. Okay, well, I don't know if I can call that petty or not, but you know, it is what it is. Francis Ford Coppola was nominated for Best Director. Both Mario Puzo and Francis Ford Coppola won Best Writing, a screenplay based on material from another medium. Mario Puzo was also not present at the award ceremony. His daughter, Dorothy Ann Puzo, accepted the award on his behalf. So a lot of these guys did not attend the Oscars ceremony. Anna Hill Johnstone was nominated for Best Costume Design. Charles Grenzbach, Richard Portman, and Christopher Newman were nominated for Best Sound. William Reynolds and Peter Zinner were nominated for Best Film Editing. Nino Rota was nominated for Best Music, Original Dramatic Score. He had withdrawn from the Oscar category. He was ineligible and refused Fortunella score, replaced by a nomination for Sleuth. Okay. Academy of Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Horror Films USA. In 2009, The Godfather won Best DVD Collection, won the Saturn Award for Best DVD Collection as part of The Godfather, the Coppola Restoration. This award was shared with The Godfather's Parts 2 and 3. American Cinema Editors USA. Pete Zinner was nominated for the Eddie for Best Edited Feature Film. I guess this is the Editor's Award Ceremony. BAFTA Awards. Anna Hill Johnstone was nominated for the BAFTA Award for Best Costume Design. Al Pacino was nominated for Most Promising Newcomer to Leading Film Roles. I mean, this was one of Pacino's earliest roles. I will not say that it's his most iconic role. Again, I still think that, as I said earlier in the episode, I just feel like the role of Tony Montana in Scarface really like solidified him as an actor. So really his like solidification as an actor, as like a force to be reckoned with in Hollywood, that didn't come for another 11 years until 1983's Scarface. Robert Duvall was nominated for Best Supporting Actor. Nina Rota won the Anthony Asquith Award for Film Music. Marlon Brando was nominated for Best Actor. He shared the nomination with he had shared his nomination for The Godfather with the movie The Nightcomers. That is all for the BAFTA Awards. On to the David D. Donatello Awards. Albert S. Ruddy, who's a producer on the film, he won the David for Best Foreign Film, Miglior Film Straniero. Al Pacino won the Special David for his acting. The DGA Awards. Francis Ford Coppola, Fred C. Caruso, who was the unit production manager. Fred T. Gallo, assistant director, and Stephen P. Skloot, another assistant director. They all won the DGA Award for Outstanding Directorial Achievement in Motion Pictures, as they should. Golden Globes. The Godfather won Best Motion Picture Drama. Marlon Brando won Best Actor in a Motion Picture Drama. Although, again, Brando refused the award in protest of U.S. imperialism and racism. Marlon Brando, you are a real one. Al Pacino was nominated for Best Actor in a Motion Picture Drama. James Caan nominated for Best Supporting Actor in a Motion Picture. Francis Ford Coppola won Best Director in a Motion Picture. Satellite Awards. 2008, The Godfather won the Satellite Award for Best Classic DVD for The Godfather Collection, the Coppola Restoration. This award was shared with Godfathers 2 and 3. The Godfather won Best Overall Blu-ray Disc for, again, same thing, you know, the Godfather Collection, the Coppola Restoration, 2008 nominee for the Satellite Awards. Golden Screen Germany. The Godfather won the Golden Screen Award, I guess. Shout out to my listeners in Germany. Golden Screen Award, 1973. The Grammys Awards. Nino Rota who was the artist composer for the score for The Godfather. He won the Grammy for Best Original Score Written for a Motion Picture or a Television Special. Nino Rota was also nominated for Best Instrumental Composition for the theme from The Godfather. How many of us haven't heard the theme from The Godfather? Cops Corner Karaoke is coming soon. Kansas City Film Critics Circle Award. Marlon Brando won the KCFCC Award for Best Actor. He was tied with Stacy Keach for Fat City, which also came out in 1972. Francis Ford Coppola won the award for Best Director. Los Angeles Critics Society Awards, 2002, The Godfather won the Sierra Award for Best DVD. National Board of Review, Al Pacino won the NBR Award for Best Supporting Actor, tied with Joel Grey for Cabaret, 1972. And The Godfather was put on the NBR's list of top 10 films. National Film Preservation Board, in 1990, The Godfather won the National Film Registry. National Society of Film Critics Awards, Al Pacino won Best Actor. And The Godfather was nominated for Best Film, came in second place. Francis Ford Coppola was nominated for Best Director, he came in third place. Marlon Brando was nominated for Best Actor, he came in second place. Robert Duvall was nominated for Best Supporting Actor. New York Film Critics Circle Awards. Robert Duvall won the NYFCC Award for Best Supporting Actor. And The Godfather was nominated for Best Film. Did not win. It was nominated. Francis Ford Coppola was nominated for Best Director. Marlon Brando nominated for Best Actor. Online Film Critics Society Awards. The Godfather Collection won Best Overall DVD in 2002. This was shared with The Godfather Parts 2 and 3. Photoplay Awards, 1978. The Godfather was nominated for a Hall of Fame movie at the nominated for the Gold Medal Hall of Fame movie. The WGA Awards, Writers Guild of America. Shout out to the WGA, shout out to SAG-AFTRA, DGA. Big salute to all of you. Mario Puzo and Francis Ford Coppola won the WGA Award for Best Drama Adapted from Another Medium. The Kinema Junpo Awards. Francis Ford Coppola was nominated for the Kinema Junpo Award for Best Foreign Language Film. He came in eighth place. DVD Exclusive Awards. 2001, Coppola was nominated for Best Audio Commentary. International Film Music Critics Awards. Nino Rota, Dan Goldwasser, Neil S. Bulk, and Timothy Grieving were nominated for Best Archival Release. OFTAs. Al Pacino won the OFTA Film Hall of Fame for his character of Michael Corleone. This was in 2022, so 2 years ago, 50th anniversary. Al Pacino won the OFTA Film Hall of Fame for Michael Corleone. Marlon Brando, in 2021, Marlon Brando won the OFTA Film Hall of Fame for his portrayal of Vito Corleone. The award was, of course, given posthumously since Marlon Brando is no longer with us. Nino Rota won OFTA Film Hall of Fame for his score in 2021. 1997, The Godfather won the OFTA Film Hall of Fame for Motion Picture. Golden Schmoes Awards. The Godfather Trilogy won Best DVD of the Year, shared with The Godfathers 2 and 3. Hollywood Professional Association Awards. In 2023, The Godfather won the HPA Award for Outstanding Achievement in Restoration. Yep, in restoration, because they like restored it and put it in like 4K, and yeah, it was great. We got some trivia. Lenny Montana, Luca Brasi, was so nervous about working with Marlon Brando that in the first take of their scene together, he flubbed some lines. Director Francis Ford Coppola liked the genuine nervousness and used it in the final cut. The scenes of Luca practicing his speech were added later. I kind of talked about that during my favorite parts, but yeah, like that's actually like true. That Lenny Montana is the actor's name. Lenny Montana, he was really, really nervous about working with the Marlon Brando. I mean, you know, so. And it just worked. During an early shot of the scene where Vito Corleone returns home and his people carry him up the stairs, Marlon Brando puts weights under his body on the bed as a prank to make it harder to lift him. Ah, Marlon Brando, that's commitment, I will say. That is definitely, that's commitment. Cinematographer Gordon Willis earned himself the nickname the Prince of Darkness since his sets were so underlit. Paramount Pictures executives initially thought that the footage was too dark until persuaded otherwise by Willis and Coppola that it was to emphasize the shadiness of the Corleone's family dealings. That makes sense. That actually makes sense. Now that I've heard that out loud, that actually makes a lot of sense. Marlon Brando wanted to make Don Corleone, quote unquote, look like a bulldog, so he stuffed his cheeks with cotton wool for the audition. For the actual filming, he wore a mouthpiece made by a dentist. This application is on display in the American Museum of the Academy. Display in the American Museum of the Academy Museum of Motion Pictures in Los Angeles in a special Godfather exhibition. Shout out to my listeners in LA, in the Sunshine State of California. I have to visit this museum one of these days. I have to actually see it, take a picture, you know, gotta let you guys know. The cat held by Marlon Brando in the opening scene was a stray that Coppola found while on the lot at Paramount Pictures and was not originally called for in the script. So content was the cat that its purring muffled some of Brando's dialogue, and as a result, most of his lines had to be looped. Yeah, I mean, that was a nice bit of improvisation, but like, how many of us haven't seen like a villain holding a cat? And I'm wondering, was Marlon Brando the one who originated that? Again, The Godfather is just such a big part of the cultural zeitgeist, folks. The movie had one cameo from Gray Fredrickson, the film's associate producer, as the cowboy in the studio when Tom Hagen encounters studio head Waltz for the first time. Okay, so we got some, not directors putting themselves in their films, but we got some associate producers. Okay, got the associate producer in the film as a cowboy. Nice. On to some goofs. Some goofs in continuity. When The Godfather is talking to Johnny Fontaine in his office, Sonny Corleone is also present. Then the scene cuts to the entrance of the wedding cake outside. Sonny can be seen with a white flower in his lapel standing by the cake. Then the scene goes back to the office where Sonny is still present with The Godfather. I'm just not picking up on that. Thank you, IMDb. Enzo, the baker, visits Don Corleone in the hospital after he is critically wounded. Enzo is holding a large bouquet of pink carnations and baby's breath. Later, when he is standing outside the hospital with Michael, the bouquet has been changed to a much smaller one with orange carnations. All right, well, that's a little gap in continuity. I didn't talk about Enzo in the favorite parts because I was trying to just kind of go over the essential parts of the film, but Enzo is brought up in the Godfather book. So again, before you watch this movie, read the book. Read the book first, so you get the full story. The waiter fills Tom Hagen's glass twice within seconds during his dinner with Waltz. I did notice that, yeah. When Don Corleone is talking to the pastry shop owner during the wedding scene, the man is holding a small shot glass. As he is getting up to grab Don Corleone's hands, the glass is still in his hand, but in the next shot it is gone. little sleight of hand, a little misdirection. In the wedding scene, immediately after Kay Adams meets Tom Hagen, the cigarette in her hand disappears and then reappears. Stop smoking, folks. Just stop it. Factual errors. The use of the title incorrect, as the proper use of this term of respect is always attached to the individual's first name, not surname. Marlon Brando's character should have been addressed as Don Vito, not Don Corleone. Same rule would apply to the other Dons, Barzini, Fanucci, etc. Okay, well, it's a factual error, but that was probably, I wonder, was that a conscious choice that Brando made, or that Brando or Coppola made? And I wonder, was that a conscious choice that they made for Don to be affiliated with their last name, not their first name? No. But yeah, the Don, you know, the term of respect is commonly associated with the first name, not the last name. When seen in uniform at the wedding, Michael's shirt collars are missing their captain's bars. Marine Corps officers wear their rank insignia on their shirt collar points as well as on the epaulets of their coats. Big salute to the U.S. Marine Corps, to any and all military veterans listening to Cops Corner. We thank you for your service to this great nation. The typefaces shown in the headlines of the various New York City newspapers depicted are almost all incorrect for the newspaper show. Wow. All of them. That's wild. If Captain McCluskey had broken Michael Corleone's jaw, then Michael should not have been able to talk so soon afterward. When he's discussing the hit on Captain Mark McCluskey and Virgil the Turk Solozzo in the restaurant, his jaw would have been wired. This is true. Through the wire. From a New York City hospital room, Michael, played by Al Pacino, gives the operator a number to reach station-to-station call from NYC to Long Beach. To complete within 10 seconds would have been all but impossible in 1945, even with a private line bypassing the hospital switchboard and Sonny waiting by the phone. The necessary socket plugging by operators, along with the standard verbal protocols through at least two busy NYC area switchboards, station-to-station dialing in New York, was still years away. During evening rates would take the better part of a minute and likely longer. It's a nice bit of time period specificity. I've never had to make a collect call or call long distance. This is all before my time, folks. I'd love to know what it was like for those of you who were alive when this movie came out, for those of you who were alive in like the 50s, 60s, 70s, calling collects, making long distance calls. I want to know, how difficult was that? Yeah. Because Gen Z, we got it easy. Incorrectly regarded as goofs. The punch to Michael's face broke his cheekbone, which gave him a permanent black eye and caused his sinuses to continually run, hence the use of a handkerchief all the time, until he got back to America and had surgery to fix it. Freddie says the doctor did a good job. The car Michael and Apollonia drive is a right-hand drive, whereas Italy drives on the right, and you would expect vehicles to be left-hand drive. However, Italian car manufacturers Alfa Romeo and Lancia continue to produce cars with right-hand drive for sale in Italy until the 1950s. Right. The exterior setup shot for the summit meeting of all families is of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. While this seems like an unlikely place for a family meeting, it's an indication of how high their influence reaches. This is very true. When Michael is moving Vito to a different room in the hospital with the help of the nurse, we can see that Marlon Brando instinctively moves his hand when it hits the door. However, he is conscious, hence his crying when Michael is holding his hand, just heavily sedated due to the pain inflicted by his gunshot wounds. Peter Clemenza's house has an AC hanging out the window. However, window air conditioners were first marketed in the mid-1930s, and even though they were expensive, Clemenza would have been able to afford one. Okay, so none of those were goofs, folks. Revealing some mistakes, during the sequences filmed in Sicily, Michael's broken jaw makeup does not match the makeup used during the sequences filmed in New York. This is because Paramount Pictures would not pay the cost of sending makeup artist Dick Smith to Italy with the rest of the crew. Yeah, you know, can't always afford to do everything. Money, am I right? Watch closely during the fight between Sonny and Carlo, and you can see Carlo slightly jumping as Sonny throws him over the little fence. I already brought up my slight issue with that scene. Some of the fighting choreography is a bit off. Outside the hospital, as Captain Mark McCluskey prepares to punch Michael Corleone, as the shot changes, showing McCluskey, played by Sterling Hayden, punching Michael, it is clearly not Sterling Hayden throwing the punch, as evidenced by the longer brown hair of the man doing the punching versus Hayden's short gray hair. Stunt double. When Cuneo is killed in the revolving door, the bullet holes appear too late after each shot. The holes also appear nowhere near where the gun was aiming when fired. I did not notice that. When Sonny is beating up Carlo, the actor is momentarily changed to a stuntman who doesn't look much like Gianni Russo. They were limited by the technology of their time. Miscellaneous. When Sonny beats up Carlo, James Caan can be clearly seen in profile, faking a punch so badly that he misses Gianni Russo by a foot and a half, with his fist passing within 8 inches of his own chest. So what I've been saying this entire episode has now officially been confirmed by IMDb. When Michael is at his father's funeral, he says he will meet with the heads of the five families. But since he is the head of one of the families, he should have said that he will meet with the other four heads of the families. Mo Green was not a family head. Math. Kay's hairstyle when she and Mike are having dinner just before he goes to the hospital to see his father is more suitable for later decades. However, it does resemble some hairstyles of Doris Day of the early 1950s. During the hospital scene, as Michael and the nurse are wheeling Vito's bed into the storage room, they almost pinch Vito's hand in the doorframe. He jerks his hand out of the way. This was already mentioned. Michael Corleone supposedly won the Navy Cross during World War II, but the ribbon for the Navy Cross does not appear on his Marine uniform at the wedding party scene in The Godfather. Wonder, was that something that maybe they put in the book and then didn't put into the movie? Anachronism. When Michael is arriving in Las Vegas, supposedly set in the very early 1950s, when he, Fredo, Tom, and others are getting out of the car in the hotel driveway, two long-haired, bearded hippie types from the early 70s can be seen through the window in the lobby. In the DVD commentary, Francis Ford Coppola admits that he is embarrassed by this oversight, but that the shot was done on the cheap by the second unit. Yeah, I mean, makes sense, you know, these things happen. 50-star U.S. flag in 1947 on the building where the peace conference is held. Right, because the U.S., I think, had 48 states up until, like, it didn't have 50 states until 1961. That was when Hawaii, 1959, that was when Hawaii and Alaska were added as the 49th and 50th state, respectively. Yeah, so 1947, I think we still had, I don't know if we had 48 states, but we definitely had less than 50 states at that time. When Michael finds his father without protection in the hospital, he picks up the phone by the bed to alert the family. The receiver has a curly cord, which wasn't available until the mid to late 1950s. I'm telling you, props department, tighten up. Come on, let's have some time-specific props, guys. What's up with that? When Captain Mark McCluskey confronts Michael Corleone outside the hospital, the sound of a conversational female voices heard emanating from the police's vehicle radios. At the time, however, the New York Police Department's primary radio system was based solely on one-way broadcasts from headquarters with male police officers behind the microphone. Well, maybe things happen a little bit differently in the Godfather universe. IMDb. When Michael moves his father's bed from the hospital room into the hallway, there's a sign on the wall over Michael's shoulder which lists Robert O. Lowry as the fire commissioner. He was commissioner in the 1970s, not the 1940s. It should have been Patrick Walsh. Shout out to the New York Fire Department, New York Police Department. Big salute to law enforcement across the United States, especially our firefighters and our boys in blue. Salute. AV unsynchronized. During Sonny and Carlo's fight, one of Sonny's movie punches is shot from the wrong angle and clearly misses, but still produces the sound of an impact. I tell you, how many times are we going to see this? I mean, this is like the third time that this has been brought up. When Mo Green says his line, "I talked to Barzini," it's obviously dubbed in. Maybe not obvious enough. I didn't pick up on that. When Virgil the Turk Solozzo releases the abducted Tom Hagen, he says to him, "And bad luck for you if you don't make that deal." His lip movements, however, show that he only says, "And bad luck for you." True. When Don Corleone is heard off camera introducing the heads of the other families and where they're from at the meeting, his voice is noticeably different than it was in scenes before or after. Okay, good ear, whoever pointed that out. In Vito's brush with death, one hitman's pistol emits a muzzled flash, visible just after a cut to the overhead shot of them running away. But there is no accompanying sound effect for this last gunshot. Crew or equipment visible. When Carlo kicks the bathroom door trying to beat Connie, the camera is visible for a few frames through the mirror of the door. I gotta figure that. After shooting Virgil the Turk Solozzo and Captain Mark McCleskey, Michael Corleone walks into the camera. He does walk into the camera. When Fredo enters the car to drive just before Don Corleone's assassination attempt, you can clearly see a male crew member's face in the driver's side mirror as he opens / closes the door. Just before the Don Corleone assassination attempt. Okay. Error. We got one error in geography. When the Turk takes Michael Corleone to the restaurant for their conference, his car drives onto a bridge where Michael sees a sign reading to New Jersey, and he asks, "We're going to New Jersey," just before the car U-turns in mid-span. In fact, the only bridge between Manhattan, where they picked Michael up, and New Jersey is the George Washington Bridge, and the bridge on which the car is shown is definitely not the GWB. It may be the Williamsburg or 59th Street Bridge. Okay, yeah. Coppola, error in geography. Shout out to my listeners in New York City, in the state of New York, Long Island, big salute. The island of Manhattan has 21 bridges in and out. Maybe I'll check out the movie 21 Bridges if you guys haven't already. RIP Chadwick Boseman. Plot holes. Lou would have shot Michael when he left the restaurant on his own. To allow Michael to assassinate the Turk and McCloskey, the Corleones have to go through a risky scheme involving hiding a gun in a public bathroom and holding Michael and hoping Michael can find it. Their plan also requires Michael having to flee the country as a murder suspect and runs the risk that he could be convicted and sentenced to prison for life. However, once they know the location of the meeting, they could have other hitmen come in and carry out the assassination, thus avoiding any risk of Michael not finding the gun and reducing the chance that he gets blamed for the killings. Mind blown. The Turk would have had a couple of his men at another table in the restaurant. This is true. It's all very, very true, okay? Like, Corleones discover where the meeting will take place, from an informer at the police station. However, the Turk would surely have known that the police captain had to remain on call 24 hours a day, and in any case, Captain Mark McCluskey would have given a false location. Okay, IMDb. You know what, guys? I'm not gonna let IMDb ruin this movie for me. Okay, So Lozo agrees to have dinner with Michael only a few days after trying to kill his father. These are all very, very true. These are all very true. Yeah. Character error. At around 17 minutes at the train station, Jeff Smith is approached by Susan Payne and three other women. Nope. That's from another movie. My bad. We got a boom mic visible. Did anybody see a boom mic on the set of The Godfather? Let me know. During the scene of the meeting between Mo Green and Michael, the boom mic can be seen clearly as Mo sits down for the first time. A shadow also reflects a hurried movement behind the camera. Wow, that's... yeah. And lastly, we got some character error. When Tom Hagen is trying to convince Sonny not to go to war after Vito Corleone was almost murdered, he states that the Corleone family will be outcasts and all the five families will go after the Corleone family. However, the Corleone family is one of the five families. So he should have said that the other four families will go after the Corleone family. Math, math, and math. It's very important. It's very, very important. I can say that because I'm a math teacher. When an old man sings "A Luna Mezzo Omer" during the wedding celebration, his dentures can be seen coming loose. He resets his teeth without missing a note. I peeped that. Yeah, I noticed that. When Tom tells Vito that Sonny is dead, Vito refers to him as consigliere of mine. And pronounces the word phonetically. That is, he pronounces the G and the L. In Italian, in a GL blend, the G is silent. A native Sicilian speaker would know this, and all the other characters pronounce it correctly. Honestly, the whole time I was reading the novel and watching the movie, like reading the novel, I was pronouncing it consigliere, but then in the movie they say consigliere, so I realized that I now realize that the G is silent. At around 2 hours 30 minutes at the Don's funeral, one of the participants makes the sign of the cross incorrectly. He does top right, bottom left. It's top, bottom, left, right. Yes, well, I know that Catholics go top, bottom, left, right, Father, Son, Holy Spirit. Can't remember, like, was it the Byzantines or... I think there's some who go like top, bottom, right, left instead of left, right. But yeah. Very incorrect and blasphemous. When Sonny is beating Carlo, the actor Frank Severo is watching the fight. Frank Severo played the young Jenko Abbandando in the back in time scenes in The Godfather 2. Nice little time lapse. Like the Willem Dafoe cameo in Spider-Man 3 when they were at the jazz club. I got some quotes. To Rocco, when he killed Paulie in the car. Peter Clemenza, leave the gun. Take the cannoli. I'm pretty sure that line was improvised. Michael, my father is no different than any powerful man, any man with power, like a president or senator. Kay, do you know how naive you sound, Michael? Presidents and senators don't have men killed. Michael, oh, who's being naive, Kay? And then Michael speaking to Carlo. There's a different scene, Michael speaking to Carlo. Only don't tell me you're innocent, because it insults my intelligence and makes me very angry. I pointed that out in my favorite parts segment. So now we got a user review. Amazing movie, 10 out of 10. The acting was simply amazing. What else could you say? What could be more appealing to people, even today, than watching actors like Al Pacino, Marlon Brando, James Caan, Diane Keaton, Talia Shire, and Robert Duvall? This is like heaven for someone who is a fan of movies. With this movie, Brando was able to bring himself back into the limelight. His performance as the Godfather alone is iconic. His character has been recreated so much in films that it has almost, if it has not already, become a cliche. His performance, though, was not. His performance was subtle and breathtaking. It was so genuine and realistic that it was not just probably, but definitely more genuine than Marlon Brando himself. Al Pacino was perfect for this film as well. What a way to start up your career. His character was all about depth, and he displayed it perfectly. He was able to display his own inner battles in his mind, as well as the battles he had with his family, friends, and enemies. His character was more of a psychological character study than anything else to me. Robert Duvall, to me, was the glue to the movie. He added a different perspective to everything in just that he was not Italian, yet having the respect of the mafia. His character is a man of high authority within the Corleone family who was listened to and insightful. This was simply perfect, giving the film great balance throughout. The rest of the cast was just icing on the cake. The writing was phenomenal and breathtaking. As mentioned before, there has been no movie quoted more than this. It is not even the quotes, though, that makes the writing in here so perfect. It is the symbolism and meaning that went into every scene. There are countless symbols, messages, and lines in here that are so memorable, yet it is as realistic as a movie could get. Thank you, Daniel Feerst, F-E-E-R-S-T, for giving us this review on IMDb on the 22nd of January, 2020. Honestly, this user review just takes the words right out of my mouth. To be honest, I say this is the greatest film of all time. I'm gonna say that now. The Godfather, it's the greatest film of all time. The greatest film of all time. And yeah, Robert Duvall's character, him being the non-Italian adopted son of Don Corleone, yet him having the respect of the mafia and of the five families. And yeah, it is probably one of the most realistic, although it is technically fiction, it's like realistic fiction. It's like the most realistic mafia movie. It was made at a time when New York was called Fear City. Like there's a documentary series. It's like a four-part documentary on Netflix called Fear City that talks about mob rule, that talks about the mafia in New York in the 1970s. I mean, yeah, the fact that this movie's set in New York and it takes place in the 40s, I mean, this movie, the acting, the writing, the pacing, the cinematography, everything is just superb. 10 out of 10, I have no problem with giving this movie a 10 out of 10 as well. IMDb rating is a 9.2 out of 10, not high enough. Letterboxd score is a 4.6 out of 5. I disagree with both of those scores. This movie is deserving of at least a 9.7 on IMDb and maybe a 4.8 on Letterboxd. Letterboxd only 4.6 out of 5. I mean, that's high, but this is The Godfather we're talking about. Official details. The movie was released on March 24th, 1972 in the United States. It is an American movie. The movie is primarily in English. There are some scenes that were filmed in Italian and Latin. They do speak a bit of Latin and some Italian in this movie as well. The movie is also known as Mario Puzo's The Godfather. Francis Ford Coppola was very, very adamant about calling the movie Mario Puzo's The Godfather. The version of the film that I watched on Amazon Prime Video, the title, pretty sure when you watch the movie, that the title is Mario Puzo's The Godfather, not just The Godfather. But One of the filming locations was Forza d'Agro in Messina, Sicily, Italy. They used that as the setting for the Corleone village. The movie was... The production companies for the film are Paramount Pictures, along with Albert S. Ruddy Productions and Alfren Productions. Big shout out to all three of those production companies. Box office. The movie had an estimated budget of $6 million and it made about $6 million, which is about $44.5 million in today's money. Its gross domestic box office haul was about $136.4 million, which translates to close to $1 billion in 2024, adjusted for inflation. Its opening weekend, it made $302,393, its opening weekend in the U.S. and Canada, which translates to about $2.2 million today. Its gross worldwide, at the worldwide box office, The Godfather took home $250.3 million, which is about $1.9 billion today. So this movie made bank at the box office. Period. Then and now. Rotten Tomatoes has given this movie a score of 97%. The audience has given it a 98%. Critics' consensus says that The Godfather is one of Hollywood's greatest critical and commercial successes. The Godfather gets everything right. Not only did the movie transcend expectations, it established new benchmarks for American cinema. I think when we look at Hollywood, we have to look at like pre-Godfather and then post-Godfather. Like The Godfather really just showed audiences and showed like fellow directors and writers like where we can go with storytelling and with movies, and I think beyond just the gangster film genre but like film at large. That's why I say The Godfather is the greatest film of all time, because it was just so impactful at that time. I think Citizen Kane is a great film in its own right as well. I just don't think it's as impactful given the fact that, well, it was dead on arrival initially. It was booed at, I think, the 1942 Academy Awards. Like, it got booed at the Academy Awards. Citizen Kane's about 40 years ahead of its time, but The Godfather was so impactful in 1972, and then over 50 years later, we're still talking about it. So, that's why I put The Godfather above Citizen Kane. You know, that's where I disagree with the American Film Institute. So, with all that being said, I hope that you all can go, if you haven't already, read the book and watch the movie. Where can you watch The Godfather? You can stream The Godfather on Paramount Plus. You can also rent or buy The Godfather on Apple TV, Prime Video, or Vudu. That is what I did. I rented it on Prime Video. Go check out this movie, guys. All right, and let me know what you think. So in closing, that's all for this very long episode of a very long review of The Godfather. If you like what you heard today, then don't forget to click the like button, subscribe, and give us a 5-star review wherever you're listening from. Follow Cops Corner on Instagram, Threads, and TikTok, so that way you can stay up to date on all things Cops Corner. All that information is in the show notes below. If you made it to the end of this episode, I greatly, greatly appreciate it. I know these episodes can be a bit long. Be sure to click that bell so that you get notified when I post. And tune in to Talk Time with Morgan Cobbs, Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. Chuuk Standard Time, live on YouTube, available everywhere else the next day. I hope you guys enjoyed your stay here at Cobbs Corner, your one-stop shop for all things TV, film, and pop culture. As always, I'll talk to all of you guys in the next episode. Peace.
Check the mic and make sure it sound right, boys. sound right, boys.